everyone, and welcome into episode number 254 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Carson.
I'm Michael.
Going jump last, the apparently. Gun there, Carson.
Yeah, Carson's ready to go.
It's his third episode, and he's like, I don't need to go last for the names.
Okay. Everybody knows who I am now.
Yeah, so Carson, tell us something.
What do you want to know?
I don't know. I'm just going to leave it open-ended. Tell us something that's not related to your fact. Go.
Oh, fun fact, I don't eat chocolate, and I know this freaks people out, but I really don't like chocolate, and actually sometimes when I eat it, I get nauseous. Like, it just, I'm not a chocolate fan. Or peanut butter, so that really...
So Reese's are, like, your worst nightmare.
Yeah, no, that stresses people out, and I don't like either of those foods.
I think that's a great thing, because then there's more chocolate in the world for me. When someone tells me they don't like guacamole, I'm like, yeah, let's be best friends. So when we're around in a party, I can take double the servings, say it's for you, and then eat it all myself.
There you go. Because I like salty food. So if you put Cheez-Its, potato chips in front of me, like the box of Cheez-Its will be gone in an hour because I could just eat the whole thing and no big deal. But no, chocolate, good. Nope.
I'm going down a totally different path. I'm going down the path of you are a monster. You are not a good person.
No,
it's quite a jump.
That is aggressive.
It's funny because I've never liked chocolate, even as a kid, like a little kid, never liked it. And one year for my birthday, my mom got one of those Friendly's watermelon cakes. That's, if you don't know what it is, it looks like a giant watermelon. It's an ice cream, like sherbet. It's watermelon flavored, but there was little chocolate specks in it that were the watermelon seeds.
Yeah.
And I took a bite and I made this like face. I think I was like in middle school too. And I was like, oh, this doesn't taste right. And I asked my mom, like, what's, this is weird. I like watermelon. I like watermelon ice cream, sherbet. And she didn't tell me there was chocolate in it. And she's like, oh, well, there's a little piece of chocolate, thinking I wouldn't notice. Oh, I noticed. And then I had to pick them all out before I could eat the rest of it, the rest of my piece of watermelon.
Like an actual watermelon.
Yeah. I was like, no, I can't. This doesn't taste right.
So. I've had a problem recently because I've been dealing with a lot of people who are monsters in the things that they do. Like, these are just such massive social transgressions that they cannot be let go of. Like my mother.
Okay.
My mother is a monster. We had a family party where there was a bowl of Skittles and a bowl of M&Ms.
No.
And then at the end of the night, she poured them all into one container.
Nope. Absolutely not. nothing to divide them either, right?
No. Yeah. Just mixed together M&Ms and Skittles all in one bowl.
No. That's how you screw with somebody. If
right.
If you want to mess with somebody, you put it all in the same bowl and you just leave it out and don't say anything.
Right. That's awful. And then I went this weekend. I went to Wegmans, mm-hmm. and I got a piece of pizza for my son to have for lunch. And I said to the girl who gave me the thing, it was a big piece of pizza, and he's a 3-year-old. So I asked her if she could cut it in half. Yeah. So she cut it in half.
No.
Width-wise.
No. Wrong.
Monster. She cut it in half width-wise.
Not down the crust to the middle.
Oh, it was a slice.
Yeah.
I thought
a whole pizza, like a slice of pizza.
That's a circle. And
it's a diameter. That makes all the sense of the world.
Yeah.
That I agree with. No, this was a triangular piece of pizza that she cut width-wise across the middle to cut it in half.
Madness.
Yeah. So I may be getting overly emotional about this, but
no,
I think I'm right, and I think Michael's with me.
I'm totally with you. I'm willing to go back to that Wegmans and, scold that person.
I looked at her. Like, she did that, and she handed it to me, and I just looked at her, and she looked down, and she knew she did something wrong, but she couldn't figure out what it was.
Oh,
I made her take it back
worst.
And cut it the right way.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk about facts.
Well, mine actually has to do with candy.
All right, well then, go for it with a segue.
That sounded more like, I don't know, like a, I don't, not, no.
Someday.
We'll get you there, Lindsay.
Someday.
Mine is very simple.
Cool.
This is according to NYU.
NYU, that
is a doctoral
place.
Student at NYU and his colleagues. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
We've talked about this before. I feel like this comes up every now and then. Is this a new study?
This is a study that was about 2 years ago.
Okay, so this might have been newer, because I know that there was some university that did this at some point and did a whole big thing about it.
No, this was a study published in the Journal of Fluid Mechanics.
Oh, Journal of Fluid Mechanics.
Fancy. Yes.
So this is out of NYU. It was published. It was a study done. We have an answer.
So how did they go about it? So again, this is one of those things that I know. Because I do believe we've asked this question before, but so early on, like this was probably question 5 of the very first trivia that
right.
we've ever done.
And if that's the case, then this is a newer study.
Okay.
So your answer may be off.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Sure. So did they, because again, I've researched this, did they use machinery? Did they use people? Did they use an average based on multiple, you know, test subjects?
You know, it doesn't say, but it gives a bunch of stats.
Okay.
Okay.
So what are the guesses? I've got a guess. You want me to go first? Or you want me to go last?
I want Carson to go first.
Okay.
I have no real authority to say that, but I just, you'd been quiet for a minute. So okay. I just wanted you to come back in.
I can do that. And we don't know how they determine this. I mean, they just looked tootsie pop until they got the center. Let's go with 50.
50. Okay.
Just a solid number.
Lindsay?
I don't know why 37 is sticking out in my head, but that seems really low, but I feel like that was a number somehow associated with Tootsie Pops in my brain, but I think it's more than that, so I'll say 137.
Okay.
According to Mr. Turtle, he never made it. Yes. Mr. Owl could do it in 3.
Right.
But I believe the correct answer is 364.
According to this, uh-huh, you are all very, very low.
Okay.
Very, very low.
Yes.
Oh.
What are the kind of tongues are they using?
It says here it takes an estimated 1,000 swipes of the tongue per centimeter of candy to reach the center of one's favorite lollipop.
Oh, so there's no sucking.
Right.
But I mean, I feel like if you're...
Well, that was the question. How many licks?
This is uncomfortable.
Should we have saved this for Dirty Turkey?
Yeah. Ooh, you could play it to Little Kim, too. How many licks... That would have been,
you know what? That would be something really cool to do at Dirty Trivia, is to put Tootsie Pops all over all the tables and then take an aggregate. Do our own study.
Oh, that would be
interesting. That's the whole night. How many licks does it take to get to that? That's the final bonus question of Dirty Trivia.
It is not that, but so, I like where your head is at.
How many licks did it take you to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? Now that's the great question.
Anyway, so going back to the NYU study.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It takes an estimated 1,000 swipes of the tongue per centimeter of candy to reach the center of one's favorite lollipop. This ultimately means that a Tootsie Pop at approximately 1.063 inches in diameter would need to be licked about 2,500 times for somebody to successfully make it to the middle.
Okay. I look forward to reading that in your link dump.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, and how you phrase that question.
How many licks does it take to get the center of a Tootsie Pop?
According to the NYU, according to the 2015 NYU survey.
Right.
How
study.
Many licks?
Whatever. Yeah.
2,500. There you go.
It's a lot of licking.
I said it last week, I'd get all three of you.
Finally, you did, so props to you.
It only took you the better part of the year.
Yeah, month.
Yeah. Well, this year.
This year, yes.
Carson, I detected a hint of sarcasm with that.
It was a splash if I felt it, right?
I mean, you had applause, so you should be grateful you had applause. That didn't, yeah. No one else got applause today.
We're going to miss you next week, Carson.
I'll miss you too.
Cool. So I guess I'll go. I've been ending, and I got a fact about drugs.
Drugs,
you know. Drugs, they're like a thing that people do sometimes. But this is not a good
kids
kind
do them,
of...
Right?
Yeah, all the cool kids. This is not... a cool drug. This is a deadly drug. But it kind of did
all
some...
All drugs are deadly drugs.
Yeah. I don't know. We're off the rails.
Just say no.
We're off the rails again. And it's only 5 minutes in. Okay.
Oh, dear.
So what year was the first year that a drug had to be proven safe before it could be marketed?
So it's like the founding
of
the
FDA?
So
this was the law. It's the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act was the name of the law. This law was passed in what year? And this law established that a drug had to be proven safe before it could be marketed to the general public.
I feel like this fact came from an offshoot of your Texas Roadhouse research.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
100%. Thanks, FDA website. Appreciate you.
I want to say that the FDA was a Nixon thing. So I'm going to say pre-Nixon, I don't know, maybe post-Nixon, I don't know. Somewhere between 62 and 75. So let's go with 1971.
See, I'm going to say earlier.
So you're saying
that
before 1971, like you could just do whatever with drugs and you could just market them?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say way earlier than that. I'm going to say like 61.
1961.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to go even earlier.
Based on the look on your face.
Because I feel like the... I'm going to say 1954, just throw out a random year, but I also feel like there was definitely like advertisements for cosmetics and stuff in the 50s, so they have probably had to be some regulation about what was all going on. So I'm going to say 1954.
Yeah, I mean, there was
I don't agree.
There was cocaine in Coca-Cola back at the turn of the century. So I would assume it would be after that.
Cocaine is still not in Coca-Cola. But I don't know. The way you drink Diet Coke,
something it is.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
I don't think advertising has anything to do with it. I think if you're advertising, it doesn't necessarily mean it's regulated.
Okay.
That's just me.
No, before even this law, you couldn't misbrand something. That was in like the early 20th century.
Wasn't this like the opening episode of Mad Men? Is like they were trying to redo the ads because the government just came out and said smoking was dangerous. So they were trying to rebrand their cigarettes.
I haven't seen the first season of Mad Men.
I've seen like maybe three episodes, and I remember this being one of them. And like they basically came up with, oh no, ours are filtered because we have the filter.
Right.
Everybody else's is dangerous.
Ours are filtered. Right.
No comment. I don't remember. I've seen Mad Men, but I don't remember.
I'm going to change my answer. I'm going to say like 48.
Okay. The correct answer is 1938.
Okay.
1938, mm-hmm. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. That was the first time that drugs had to be proven safe before they could be marketed. But you guys were close because in 1962, that was when they actually had another law was passed. This was after the formaldehyde with the babies that you also had to prove.
Thalidomide. Formaldehyde?
I don't remember how to say it. I'm sorry. That you also had to prove effectiveness for whatever your claim was. So there was this big, 30-year gap where you could market your drug if it was proven to be safe and wouldn't kill people, but you didn't have to necessarily prove.
Do what you say it was.
Yeah. So this whole thing happened. There was a thing called elixir sulfamide, right? Killed 107 people. Really tragically. And what was crazy about it is that since it was branded as an elixir, it was it was claiming to be an alcohol. And the current laws in the book said that you couldn't misbrand something, right, as we established. Mm-hmm. So they sent all these shipments out. They started to notice that children specifically were dying because they thought that it was a cure for strep throat, tasted like raspberries. And so the FDA was like, oh, crap, we got to, like, go seize a bunch of stuff. Like, we need to get all of this out so people stop dying. But the only legal grounds they had to do to seize this property was because it was mislabeled as elixir. And since it was no alcohol, it was misbranded, so they could therefore have the legal authority to take it back.
It was false advertising.
Ooh. And then they realized that, if it had been labeled correctly, there was nothing that they could have done to get the drug back. Because they wouldn't have had legal authority to...
Sure. Which is why they changed the laws so that they could do that moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a lot of really interesting things about this case. Like, doctors canceled their weddings to go and, like, track down people that had it. A woman said that she destroyed it, and the detectives were like, how did you destroy it? She's like, oh, I threw it out the window. So then they like went into the alley to find this bottle.
Yeah.
It was absurd. And then in one of the biggest, I think, like, F you, I'm not responsible. The guy that was in charge of the firm that made the drug was like, we manufactured it properly. There's no way that we could have foreseen this coming. man, you could have tested it. And then the chemist committed suicide. It's a whole big thing.
Whoa.
That's by the way, secret phrase, F you, I'm not responsible.
Yeah, F.U.
I like that a lot.
F.U., I'm not responsible. But it was a big, really big moment in history across a bunch of states and a lot. We'll obviously have the whole story in the link done, but highly recommend you read about it because it was a really, really big deal in how we as America and the drugs that we hopefully are safe,
By the way.
Clinical trials and things.
FDA founded in 1906.
Yeah.
Wow. It's 111 years old.
It was right around the time with the... Meat Inspection Act and all of those
those
things happening. Hmm. So full circle.
Well, and it's crazy that if it's found, FDA founded in 1906, took that long for that law to come into effect. Like, what was happening in the 20s?
What was the FDA doing for 38 years?
You may be surprised, but Congress was bickering and not really getting along very well. And, a lot of people were dying from this elixir situation.
Well, and there was a depression that kind of happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A World War II, just casual.
Yeah, so once this whole big people started dying, they were like, oh, we should probably get this law together.
Right.
I don't know why I'm laughing, but yeah, it was a tragedy. Anyway, who's next?
I can go next.
Excellent.
To let Carson round it up. All right.
So
we were speaking earlier of monsters.
We were.
And I have to bring up my article now. All right. So Realtor.com did a study. Which city, I'm going to ask this about the state, but there's a city. What is the best city able to survive a zombie apocalypse.
Ooh.
Like, not where you should go in the event of a zombie apocalypse, but right. If you live in this city now, if there were a zombie apocalypse, you would have the best chance of survival.
Okay, I know that it's not New York.
It is not New York. Yeah. New York is nothing, actually, believe it or not, nothing in the Northeast.
Yeah, I would assume so, because it's very heavy population centers. Like, so I'm assuming this is large American cities.
So I have it. I mean, large American cities being a relative term. Yeah, all of these cities are probably in the top 200.
Okay.
So, but yeah, there is not one in the Northeast.
Okay, let's talk about this, guys. What do we need for a zombie apocalypse? You need access to fresh water.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, you're gonna need access to some sort of food, because grocery stores are not gonna get supplied because everyone's gonna be eating brains. I would think that some sort of geographical safety thing would be important.
Sure.
Like mountains or something. So I would say Denver.
Okay.
Could it also be, do you need someplace like on the water that you could like leave? So like if the zombie apocalypse is happening in Florida, do you want to be someplace that you could leave and go elsewhere where there's no zombies?
I don't know, man. Like World War Z, the zombies are underwater.
Right. They're everywhere.
You don't want to. That scene in the boats is one of the craziest. Anyway, they should really do a mini series with each chapter of World War Z, because I would watch the crap out of that.
I would watch the hell out of that. Yeah. Ugh. Each one of them is individual stories.
I'd love that. Great
mini series.
Calling you, HBO.
Right.
Okay.
Netflix. Anyway. Amazon. Netflix. Hulu. Any of you. Let's get it done.
Anyway, so I'm going to stick to my Denver answer, however, because it's kind of out of the way. Yeah. There's mountains.
Denver, not in the top 10.
Really, huh?
Nothing in Colorado, but it's I see exactly your reasoning, and I understand why. And by the way, you were spot on. Literally, it says it studied a number of factors, including drinking water availability, availability of food, number of panic rooms and underground shelters, number of active military, and listings that included renewable energy generators, among many other factors.
Oh, so renewable energy and military. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'll take a swing here.
Uh-huh.
San Diego.
No.
Okay.
No, there is one in California.
It's not L.A.
It is not L.A. It's San Luis Obispo.
Oh, SLO. Yeah. That would actually be a great area.
Number three on the list.
Hmm. Yeah.
Carson?
Well, I was actually going to say San Diego, so that's a problem. Because I still like the idea of there being water. Like, you have, being on the coast, because I like this idea of that if there's a way to go somewhere else. Like, if they're attacking your city, you're like, well, I can maybe try to go somewhere else. So if I can't go to San Diego, let's try somewhere in like Florida. So
in the swamps?
Well, like down like South Florida, because then like you have enough water that maybe you can go to the Keys, maybe you can like go to Bahamas, like maybe you can get some other island that if they're attacking your
city. You can go island hopping.
Yes.
Island hopping. Why are there not more settings for zombie movies? I feel like if I'm looking through all the zombie movies that I've seen, they're always set in like a deciduous forest, and they're set in the Northeast, or they're set in regular forests. I don't feel like I see a lot of zombie movies that are set in tropical environments or that aren't cold. Am I wrong in that?
I mean, not necessarily. I think most zombie movies take place in like cities or suburbs of cities.
Yeah. But they're always, I don't know, colder,
so
I think.
Let's go with Fort Lauderdale, because Miami is too... I don't not feel in Miami, so let's go with Fort Lauderdale.
Zombie Crocs.
Yeah. Oh,
I think we might have just used that for a sci-fi picture around that we
did. I was gonna say that's the next sci-fi movie, Zombie Crocs. Fort Lauderdale. You were getting closer. It's actually Northern Florida is number two on the list. Deltona, Florida.
Okay. Deltona.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what about New Orleans?
New Orleans is not on the list.
Okay.
Nothing in Louisiana.
Ooh.
Orlando. Zombie Mickey.
Deltona.
I saw the end of Zombieland. Disney World, that would be pretty great.
Isn't that end of Zombieland?
I would love that.
I think so, yeah. All right, so number one is Lubbock, Texas. So Dust Bowl, Texas.
Okay, boo, boo, boo. Ooh, I love the concept of this fact, but I'll talk about a city that... Have you heard of this city?
I know, I've heard
You've
of
You've never
Lubbock.
Heard of Lubbock, Texas?
No.
No.
I have.
Carson. Really?
I have family in Texas, so like I know Lubbock, Texas. Like, they're not in Lubbock, but I have family, so I've heard of Lubbock, Texas.
Two out of three on the podcast have not.
Yeah. Lubbock, two out of four.
Michael,
not,
right. Easy.
That's still 50%, so...
Yes, you're right.
More than half.
Wild half. Guess, and this is just wild guess, Lubbock, one of the 10 biggest cities in Texas.
One of the 10 biggest?
Yeah.
I don't know, but why did they pick that as
definitely
the winner?
Definitely not top five, but...
Why did they pick it as the winner?
So they picked it. Now I got to go back because I was looking at which one. Michael,
I will look.
Yeah, look up how the size of the cities in Texas. So Lubbock was named number one because of the harshness of the terrain.
Oh,
it's Dust Bowl, Texas, so it's middle of nowhere, but it gets ridiculously hot and ridiculously cold. So the residents there are prepared to deal with wide ranging scenarios as far as the weather conditions and extreme conditions go. Number of panic rooms and shelters because they're in like a tornado world.
That makes sense. In that general vicinity.
Like a number of like things prepared. Number of guns per person for self defense. Number of military that lives there. Just like everything ticked off, a number of emergency generators at every house.
Is there a lot of water though? If it's a dust bowl,
there's not a lot of like natural water, but there is a ridiculous amount of like storage and prep water because they know they're in the middle of nowhere and they know they don't have any water, so they've got a ton of it prepped for any scenario.
And to cycle back,
They're prepared for emergencies.
Yeah, they're prepared for emergencies.
To cycle back, Lubbock, Texas. By population,
yeah,
number 11.
Number 11. Okay, so just outside of the top 10.
Yes. 249,000, give or take.
Yeah. So,
my bad for thinking major city.
Well, no, any major city would be terrible for a zombie apocalypse because there's too many people.
That's what I thought you were asking. Major city.
I said top 200 in the United States.
Well, that's why I went with Fort Lauderdale over Miami, because Miami's huge, but like Fort Lauderdale is like the smaller like younger brother, so I was like maybe... If we're thinking Florida, and Florida was on the list, so
yeah, I mean others on the list: Prescott, Arizona; Oklahoma City, Oklahoma; Wichita, Kansas; Kalamazoo; Duluth, Minnesota; Lynchburg, Virginia.
I'd go to Lynchburg.
That's the closest one to here. That's the only one on this side of the Mississippi.
All I just meant because that's where they make Jack Daniels.
Oh, that too. Yeah,
because I'm gonna get eaten by a zombie.
You're
gonna
be drunk when you do it. Side note about Lynchburg is that I used to work at J. Crew, and that's their like one of their big headquarters. There's when you return thing, like when we return stuff from the store in Georgetown, we have to ship everything to Lynchburg. Like everything goes there. So clothing wise, there would be a lot of J. Crew clothes just lying around. So if you want to look fashionable and preppy,
and it's the best dressed zombies.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and by the way, the way I'm going to word my question when we ask it during trivia is: the city rated as the number one city in the U.S. in which to survive the zombie apocalypse is in which U.S. state?
I like that. Okay. Also, I was going to reword that to be that way anyway. So great. I'm glad you said it on there because that's how I was going
to
word it.
Yeah. That's my questions are already written. So it's just a matter of what can I get to get you all discussing it.
Did we all go?
No, Carson.
Carson, let's go.
Carson's
wrap us up.
Okay. I will say, by the way, I would still go SLO. If I'm going to go to
San Luis Obispo, if you're going to do it, at least have nice weather.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I have another music fact. And actually, after we go over this music fact, there's another fact related to this of why I was researching this. So we'll get to that too. But the first question is, on the Billboard Hot 100, which artist had the most top 10 singles?
Of all time?
Yes. And I will tell you too, this artist had 38, which is the most anyone's ever had.
Let's get through the obvious ones.
Michael Jackson?
No.
Elvis?
No.
Is it Madonna? Solo artist or group?
Madonna is correct.
It's Madonna. Okay.
Yeah,
Madonna.
It was going to be like one of four.
Right. The Beatles, if it was
the Beatles, was going to be my fourth.
Yeah,
Weird Al Yankovic, funny enough.
Yeah, so weird. Madonna has 38, her most recent being in like 2012 with Give Me All Your Lovin', but had 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. So impressive, and she's 38. Let's hear. Elvis had 36. The Beatles had 34. And the next with 31 is Rihanna.
Yeah. She's on the list. She was going to be my guest, but you already got it first.
Yeah. Michael Jackson has 29. And then you have Stevie Wonder, Mariah Carey at 28. And then lastly, Janet Jackson, Elton John at 27.
Oh, I didn't know Janet Jackson had that many.
Yeah.
That'd be a great top 10 or like a film playground.
But the cool part of why I got to this was so... Just recently, back in December, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You just reached the top 10 for the first time, which then gave her 28th top 10, and also is the longest time it's taken a single to reach the top 10. It took 23 years, came out in 94, and then in 2017. And the reason why I did this is because back in the 90s, Billboard had this weird rule where you could only chart if you were a physical single. So a lot of songs never charted. For instance, the great example is Don't Speak by No Doubt. Never charted on the Billboard Top 100 because it wasn't a single. Even though it did, was at radio for like number one at radio for like 16 weeks and dominated everything, and you only heard it that summer, like, and nothing else on the radio.
it's just on loop.
Yeah, it was just on loop. It never charted because it wasn't a physical single. And then in the late 90s, they finally realized that was dumb because people weren't releasing physical singles anymore. So they changed that. And then in the late 2000s, early 2010s, they started to allow older songs to chart again only if they were going to chart above number 50. And they would have to have a significant, like, present. Like, it had to be some reason, like, it was everyone was streaming it, or, like, you see that with posthumous releases, like, Whitney Houston recharted after she died because so many people were interested downloading, radio was playing it. So, like, okay, this is... So every year, Mariah Carey's always, All of Christmas You charts somewhere because now because people at Christmas just start
They're
streaming
actually
it.
Counting it.
Right, they count streams now, so people are streaming it like crazy on Spotify, and now... It got streamed so much that it reached number 9, which gave her her 28th top 10 hit, and it's the longest span when it was first released to actually reaching top 10.
Cool.
Nice.
That is really good. You're great. That sounds sarcastic, but I meant it sincerely.
No, it was a cool. There was an article in Billboard. They were going through, like, because they were also doing, then looking back at people like Janet Jackson had a top 10, like Madonna, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010. And it was just like people who have had long career spans like that. So,
I think we've asked that question in trivia.
It used to be just three.
Yeah.
And it was, Mariah Carey's on the list now.
Yeah. It was Madonna and somebody.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson and Weird Al Yankovic was the only three that had a top 10 hit in four consecutive decades or something like that.
Very, very cool.
Well, you also, I think you can include Cher, too, because Cher did the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah, so. But I don't think she had a top 10 hit in the 70s or this one of
the
them.
70s, she had Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we found your wheelhouse, and that is music.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm a nerd at Billboard trivia, so that's my nerdness. My boss at work, we go back and forth and just... talk about this sometimes.
Awesome. Well, send him or her the podcast.
I will have to do that. There's a whole Wikipedia article actually on just Billboard facts. There's a lot of weird stuff like oldest person to have a number one hit. Also, there's been 9 times that a song's been number one twice by different artists. So like The Locomotion was originally by Little Eva and then went number one again by Grand Funk Railroad. And like the most recent one was Lady Marmalade with LaBelle and then Pink, Christina Aguilera. But it happened 9 times, which is weird to think.
That is a lot.
A song could be number one by 2 different artists, but still like be the same exact song.
Well, so the real question I would think in doing research on that would be how many of the originals were actually written by the one who re-recorded it? That kind of thing. Because there's a lot of like singer-songwriters where they started out as songwriters, like gave the songs to other people to record and they became hits. And then later on, they became singers and stars in their own right and re-recorded a lot of their old songs.
So if I remember correctly from this list, I don't think that's the case in any of the cases. But most of these songs are, a lot of them were songs that were really just big, like The Supremes, You Keep Me Hanging On. Songs that everyone, like, you're like, oh, or like When a Man Loves a Woman.
Right.
Songs that people recognize easily, but the cover versions were by someone like Michael Bolton.
Right.
So.
Cool.
Beans.
Well, thanks, Carson, for coming on. We'll have you on again for sure.
Absolutely.
I think. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
We already did a secret phrase.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we did a secret phrase.
Cool. If you missed it, go back
looking.
And, yeah.
we
said something, and
if
it was
if you zoomed all the way to the end to find it, ha-ha.
Yeah.
Joke's on you.
Yeah.
Joke's on you. Okay, so this has been the We Don't Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Carson.
We don't know either.
We don't know either.
Bye.